Hello. Testing. Can anyone hear me? Please raise your hands if you cannot hear me. Well, nobody raised his hand, so I guess it's working. Yeah, do you want to introduce me?
I think most people know who you are so far.
Okay. Short introductions are better, and this is a very short one. Well, I'm not giving a speech about free software today. I'm giving two speeches. One about copyright versus community in the age of the computer networks, and that followed by the danger of software patents. But in order for this to make sense, I better briefly explain what free software is, because it's free software that led me to think about those other two subjects. And it's also free software that leads some people to be interested in what I have to say about other subjects. In the 1970s, I was part of a community of programmers who shared software. Within this community, anytime a program was in use, you could go to somebody who had it and say, "Could I have the source code?" And he would give it to you. At that point, you could study the program, you could change it to suit your needs, you could redistribute it to others just as someone had redistributed it to you, and you could publish improved versions and thus contribute to its development. These freedoms, the freedoms to do all those things, are the definition of free software. Although at the time, nobody was trying to define free software. We didn't have a free software movement at that time. We just had a free software way of life, and we lived it, and we enjoyed living it. Later on, that community died for a number of reasons put together. And I found myself confronting the prospect of life in a world of proprietary software, that is, non-free software, software where you don't have the freedom to study it, to change it, to redistribute it, and to publish improved versions for other people. And I compared these two ways of life on an ethical plane, not on the purely practical plane that many people have convinced themselves is appropriate for judging how to use computers. I looked at them in terms of ethical ways of life, and I said, I refuse to live that way, the proprietary software way. It revolted me. So I decided to develop a free software operating system so that I would, and others, would be able to live the free software way of life and feel good about myself. And I hope others also will share this feeling and feel good about themselves for having chosen the free software way of life. That was the beginning of the free software movement. When your way of life is not in danger, you don't start a movement to preserve it. You just live it. But when it is in danger, when you see a horrible way of life being forced on you, at that point you may start a movement to preserve the way of life that you love. At this point, the way of life I loved and that I could feel proud and unashamed to be living was almost wiped out. It had to be rescued, brought back. You can't use a computer without an operating system. So if you're to use a computer in freedom as part of a community, you've got to have a free software operating system, but there were none in 1983. As an operating system developer, I decided I would write a free software operating system. This was the necessary step to make it possible once again to use a computer without betraying your fellow users, without being kept helpless and divided by whoever is the owner of the software. You have to have an operating system to use a computer. You have to have a free operating system to use a computer and participate in sharing. I gave this free operating system the name GNU, which stands for GNU's Not Unix. It's a recursive acronym. People sometimes see that and they ask me, but what does the G stand for? It stands for GNU. Now, I could have called it FNU or HNU or MNU or KNU or TNU, but none of those is a word, so they're not funny. And none of them has a funny song written about it. And the word GNU is simply the funniest word in the English language. And as soon as I discovered that it was a possible name, there could be no competitors for that. I gave it the name GNU's Not Unix, not only as a joke, but because it's a Unix-compatible operating system. I chose to make it Unix-compatible for technical reasons. I figured that was a way to make a portable system that a large community, existing community of Unix users could easily and painlessly switch to. I figured that would eliminate a couple of the possible practical obstacles to the success of the system. By 1991, the system was almost finished. We'd been working on it for about 7 years, and most of the essential components were done. One of the essential components was still missing. That was the system kernel, which is the program that allocates the machine's resources to the various other programs that you're running. At that point, when we had just started our kernel, someone else started writing a free kernel too. Well, actually, he started writing a kernel, and when he had it working, he decided to release it as free software, and he used the GNU General Public License, the license that I had developed for the programs that we were writing for GNU. That program, that kernel, is called Linux. We didn't know about Linux at first because he never contacted us. He never told us about it. But he announced it elsewhere on the net. And at that point, other people started looking around to find the various other pieces of software, the other essential and desirable components for a whole operating system. They looked around, and lo and behold, everything they needed was already available. What good fortune, they said to themselves. But there was no chance about it. They had found all the pieces that were waiting to be put together as the GNU system once we had all the pieces necessary, once we had the one other missing piece. So in fact, what they were doing was fitting Linux into the gap in the GNU system, making the system that's a combination, that's GNU with Linux added, or the GNU slash Linux system. But they didn't realize that. They thought they were starting with Linux and putting various other programs on top of it. They didn't realize that those other programs were the GNU system. So they called it a Linux system. And this is how it happened that we developed a free operating system that's used by some 20 or so million computers, and most of the users don't know it's our system. They think it's Linux. Now, this has practical consequences. Aside from being unfair, you know, we ought to get a share of the credit for this. After all, we pioneered it all. But there's something more important at stake than credit. I've already given you very briefly a flavor of the idealism of the free software movement. This is not just about how to make powerful, reliable software. This is about how to live a good life in a society of people who use computers. It's about having yourself the control over what the software on your computer does, instead of letting that control be in the hands of others. It's about political, ethical, and social issues that are extremely important, more important than mere practical issues. However, the author of Linux, the kernel, doesn't share our views about this. He shares the views of another movement in our community called the Open Source Movement, and they're concerned only with purely practical issues about developing software, and those are the only values that they cite. So when he gets the credit for our monumental work, the result is it's hard for us to promote our own views. People say, oh, this sounds so impractical. It's so idealistic, it must be impractical. And there they are using the system that is the practical fruit of our ideals, and it would be obvious to them that that accusation is not justified and cannot be sustained, except that they don't know it's the result of our ideals. They think it's Linux and that it was all started by somebody else for different reasons. And this is why I ask people to please call the system GNU/Linux. It'll give us equal mention. We'll get a share of the credit, which I think we're entitled to, and it will help us make people aware of what our idealism has done for them so that they won't dismiss it so quickly as impractical and foolish. It'll also help people understand the difference between an entire operating system and a kernel, which is one important piece. When you call them both by the same name, it's very hard for most people to keep straight which things you're saying about the kernel and which things you're saying about the whole system, so they're completely confused. If you call the two by two different names, if you call the kernel Linux, which is the name that its principal author settled on, and if you call the whole system GNU/Linux, then people will start realizing that you're talking about two different things. And they might remember which things you say about which one, and they might eventually understand even the technical situation. So that's why I expose myself to the abuse of people who don't believe that the system is really basically GNU. By bringing up this issue over and over and over again. Because even though some people give me abuse for it, other people understand. So it's doing some good. And the abuse, after all, only hurts my feelings temporarily. It doesn't really do any harm. And when people understand, that's doing some good. So, as the free software operating system, GNU/Linux, was becoming popular in the 90s. As people were starting to respect free software and take it seriously, people started to ask me in these speeches I was increasingly often invited to give, whether these ideas extend to anything other than software. Sometimes they asked me that to ridicule them. They say, well, what about hardware? Should these tables be free? Should those bags be free? What about computers? Should computers be free? Well, they were part. To some extent, I can't blame them. The English language has a gap. It has just one word, quote, free, unquote, for two very different concepts. In fact, more than two, but in particular, these two. One is zero price, and the other is that you have freedom. In many other languages, there are separate words for these two things, but not in English. Now, by the way, in Welsh, is there a word that means free, but only as in freedom? What? Freedh? Freedh? How do you spell it? Ah, freedh. I can't pronounce the rolled R. Oh, well. Anyway, that's the that's the word you would use in Welsh and not the word that means zero price. Sometimes people sell copies of free software for a price. I've done it myself. It's entirely legitimate. In fact, that's one of the freedoms that you have to have, or else it doesn't qualify as free software. If you're not allowed to make copies and sell them, it's not free software. So, the freedom to copy and and redistribute and the freedom to modify, what does that mean if we're talking about a physical object? Well, freedom to copy it. Do you have a copier for these things? Well, if it were Star Trek, you could mistune the transporter and it might make a copy. in reality, with today's technology, there's no way to do that. You might be able to build a factory to make more of them, but that's very specialized and very expensive. There's no simple way to take one and copy it. And by the way, what you'd have to do if you had that factory, you couldn't just give it one of these things and say, copy them. You'd have to carefully design the factory to build the things you want. So the freedom to copy physical objects is a moot point, unless someday we have the ability to copy physical objects. And what about the freedom to modify them? Well, if you buy something, you are free to modify it in general. Nobody's going to stop you. There's no law against it, for the most part. Somebody in the U.S. is starting to propose one. But for today, if you buy a chair, you know, you want to cut the legs off and put new legs on, you're certainly free to do that. So the result is that these two issues of freedom don't really arise as issues for physical objects. One of them doesn't make sense, and the other you have, so there's no need for an issue about it. The place where these issues of freedom make sense is for various kinds of information, because information can be copied and modified. And we have, in fact, laws that often prohibit you from doing so. And these laws create problems. So these questions, the issues of freedom to copy and redistribute and freedom to modify, are applicable to kinds of information. That doesn't mean that the answers we reach should be the same for all kinds of information, but the issues make sense to address for all kinds of information. On the way to addressing them, I want to review the history of copyright law, which is connected with the history of copying. Because copyright law is a restriction on the right to copy things.